Okay, good morning. Welcome back to our class learning. So today I made a special shiur, prepared a special shiur. It is Parshas Vayigash. We will be in the Parsha momentarily. What happens in this week's Parsha is very dramatic. The Parsha begins as Birshus, my mother-in-law, who is joining us this morning, and thank you for the water weekly. Yosef HaTzadik and Yehuda are in a battle for Malchus, says Rav Salvechik, in the Perek Mem Dalid, which begins Pasuk Yud Ches in our Parsha, and Yehuda launches into a whole soliloquy on why Binyamin cannot stay here, and our father will die, and father loves him so much, and his soul is tied to his soul, and if you keep Binyamin here, my father will die. Perek Mem He is the grand reveal. Yosef can no longer hold back, and he sends everybody out, Hotziu Kol Ish Me'alai, and nobody was there when Yosef makes himself known to his brothers, and he's crying, and the whole house of Egypt hears, and the whole house of Pharaoh hears, and he says famous words, and Yosef Orovichai Velo Yachlu Achav La'anos Oso Kiniv Halomi Panav. They are totally astonished. Can this be this viceroy who has been making us crazy for the past 2 years? Is our long lost brother who we sold so many years ago? Unbelievable. Don't be upset. Don't be angry. Hashem sent me before you to be the provider of life. Quickly go to father. Tell him his son Yosef is still alive. Vichihu Moshe Bechal Eretz Mitzrayim. Not only is Yosef alive, he is the ruler over the whole land of Egypt. And they go back up, they tell father, Yosef sends wagons to bring Yaakov Avinu down, they will settle in the land of Goshen. However, before Yaakov comes to Egypt, Ve'es Yehuda Shalach Lefanav, he sends Yehuda before him, Laharos Lefanav Haderech. So this is the springboard for our shiur today. Yehuda went before Yaakov Avinu to set up, says Rashi, quoting Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, a yeshiva. Before Yaakov comes down to Egypt, he has to make sure that there is a Beit Talmud, a base Talmud, a house for Torah learning before he comes back. Today is not only our Parsha Shir meeting, and not only on the secular calendar when they celebrate the new year. I'll be honest, I don't know if anybody saw Rabbi Ron Yitzchak Eisenman's piece on what to bring to the Siyum HaShas. Yeah. It was very, very beautiful. It's going around. I'm sure that you saw it. It's all over the place. So one thing you should bring is your smile. One thing you should bring is thank you to all the workers. And the third thing you should bring, and I was very surprised by this one, is your Happy New Year. And that to all the workers at the stadium, when you go to the Siyum HaShas, it is New Year. And if you do not reply with Happy New Year, to them, it is like not saying good morning. That could consider basic derech eretz. I was quite surprised. The smile part I knew, the thank you part I knew. So I will tell you, when I came into the building, down, you too? Ha! Downstairs to the African-American fellow who sits by the security desk, I think for the first time in my life, I said, good morning, what floor are we on? And then I said, Happy New Year. And to the woman who sits at the desk after I came out of the facilities, I said to her, good morning, Happy New Year. It's something I've really... Why not? Besides for all of that, that it's Parshas Vayigash, and on the secular calendar, it is their new year. It is also the day that is monumental across the globe of Siyum HaShas. So the springboard for today's shiur is the fact that Yaakov sent Yosef, sent Yehuda before him to set up a yeshiva. Rav Soloveitchik says in the study of Torah, in a shiur related on June 19, 1975, this was related even before I was born, my credo, C-R-E-D-O, credo regarding Torah and the way Torah should be taught is based upon the Torah itself. I have been a Rosh Yeshiva or a teacher of Gemara all of my life, or at least the major part of my adult life. I have taught many, many people. And when I teach, time comes to a stop for me. I do not look at the timepiece, I do not look at the clock, or at my wristwatch. I just teach. I do not know how to explain it, says the Rav, but teaching has a tremendous and very strange impact upon me. When I teach Torah, I feel the breath of eternity upon my face. Even now, in my old age, says the Rav, teaching Torah and giving shiurim relieves me of the fear of death and all the gloomy and depressing moments which elderly people go through. When I teach Torah, I feel rejuvenated, as if I was 25 or 30 years old. If not for the study and teaching of Torah, I would have lost my sanity in what he calls the year of his triple mourning, 1967, when he lost his mother, his brother, and his wife all in 1 year. He says, I was on the verge of a mental collapse, a breakdown. I did not break down. I emerged victorious. The victory over despair was due to one thing, I would say. My overwhelming dedication to Torah. I'm not trying to brag or boast. I'm telling the truth. I was sick that year, the year of my triple mourning. I was sick the following year, but I felt that somehow, because of teaching Torah, I was not alone. I had somebody. That somebody was invisible, but I felt his presence. I could confide in him. There was somebody whose shoulder I could cry upon. There was somebody from whom I could demand words of solace and comfort. People do not know, and again, please take it in proper spirit. I am not bragging, but people do not know how busy I am and what my schedule is, says the Rav. They know I teach Shiurim here in New York, Yeshiva University. All right, fine. I say Shiurim 3 times a week in the yeshiva. It never happens. I get through the Shiur in 1.5 hours, 2 hours, 3 hours. Sometimes the Shiur is even more than 3 hours. Apparently his Shiurim were not time-bound by the clock. It is very strange. The boys in my class are very young, says the Rav. Perhaps a quarter, a third of my age, yet they come out exhausted. And I come out of Shiur refreshed. Then I return to Boston every Friday morning from 8:30 for 3 hours till 11:30. I study with my son-in-law, Rav Twersky. Shabbos, believe me, I cannot afford to take a nap on Shabbos afternoon. I have not taken a nap on Shabbos afternoon for the last 20 years. First, I study with Moshe. Who is Moshe Twersky? Rav Moshe Twersky, Zecher Tzadik Kadosh Levracha, Gaon Olam, Hashem Yikom Damo, the Rav's eldest grandson. I would say 20 years I've not taken a nap on Shabbos. First, I study with Moshe, 3 hours at least. And I study with Meir. Who's Meir? Twersky Shlita. Why are you Rosh Hashiva? This is my brother's rabbi. I study with Meir 2.5 hours, the same with Sunday and the same with Monday. I simply have no time to sit down and relax. The cathartic impact on me of studying Torah is rooted in the wondrous experience I have when I open the Gemara. Somehow, when I open the Gemara, I have the impression, do not call it a hallucination. It's as if I hear, so to say, the soft footsteps of somebody invisible. He comes in. He sits down with me. He looks over my shoulder. It is a simple idea, not mystical at all. Our sages have already said the presence of God dwells amongst those who occupy themselves with the study of Torah. My daughter was saying last night at the table that maybe tomorrow Mashiach is going to come. There is the Ribono Shel Olam when there's a gathering of Torah. B'kol makom asher azkir eshemi from Parshas Yisroel, avo eilayich uveirachticho, wherever my name is mentioned, said God, I will come there and I will bless you. We all believe the one who gave the Torah has never deserted the Torah. He simply walks, he accompanies Torah, wherever the Torah has a rendezvous, an appointment, a date with man. There the giver of Torah is. What must you make known unto your children and your children's children? What should you make known to your children and your children's children? Tell them what took place at Har Sinai. The Torah does not say only make the halachos known to them. Tell them about your rendezvous with God. Tell them they should experience exactly what you experienced when you stood with God at Chorev, at Matan Torah, the fear, the awe, the tremor in your heart, the trembling. That is how a Jew must feel when he engages in Torah, when he stands before God, the fear, the awe. If a Jew cannot experience revelation when he is busy studying Torah, then this pursuit is forbidden. Oh, there. This is the The study of Torah is an ecstatic, metaphysical, beyond physical performance. It is an act of surrender to the Almighty. And the Rav says that he feels the gentle pressure of the hand of God resting upon his frail shoulder. He feels that somebody is there. He would not have gone through his year of triple mourning were it not for the study of Torah. The Pasuk tells us in this week's Parsha, after they go up and they tell Yaakov that Yosef is alive and they show him the agalos, the wagons that Yosef sent to bring Yaakov and his family, Shivim Nefesh, down to Mitzrayim. Kol ha-nefesh ha-bal le-Yaakov Mitzrayim ha-yotzei yirecho milvad neshei b'nei Yaakov. Kol nefib shishim v'sheish. All the souls that came down, besides for his daughters-in-law, 66. U'b'nei Yosef asher yulo lo b'mitzrayim nefesh shnayim. Kol nefesh l'veis Yaakov ha-ba Mitzrayim ha-shivim. So the total number of Yaakov's family at this point was 70. Okay. Ve'es Yehuda perek mem vav pasuch chavches. Ve'es Yehuda shalach l'fanev el Yosef. Yehuda was sent before Yaakov to Yosef. Lehoros lefanav. So if you know, the shorish of lehorot is the same shorish as mora more Torah. A more is an instructor. A more is a teacher. The word Torah itself means instruction. It is a law book. Torah, hora'ah, ki misham hotzei hora'ah. What it means is Torah. So the word lahoros lefanav, to show the path or to clear the path before him, the Medrash, which we're going to look at inside, understands that this is a reference to setting up a base Torah. Torah, hora'ah, mora, lahoro lefanav. It's all the same shorash. So Yehuda was sent before Yaakov to Yosef, lahoros lefanav, Geshona, because they're going to settle in Goshen, by Yavo Arza Goshen, and they come to the land of Goshen, and Yosef harnesses his chariot, and he goes to meet Yisrael, his father, to Goshen, and they fall upon the necks, and everybody's crying, and we know the famous, they're saying, Yaakov is saying, Kriya Shema. So what is Lahoros Lefanav? So first Rashi says, Ketargumbo, it is explained like Targum Unka says, Lefanos Lombakom, Lahoros Ha'ech Yisashebo. So it means to find or to clear a path where he will settle. That's the first interpretation quoted by Rashi. What was Yehuda doing? To clear a place for him, to instruct him how he will settle. It's a major move. He's an old man. He only lived in Egypt for 17 years. He had a very turbulent and what you could say, traumatic life. He had many enemies. He had to deal with Esav, he had to deal with Lavan, he had to deal with Tsaras Yosef and Tsaras Dina, and that Rachel died along the way, and first he lives in Eretz Yisrael, and then 14 years in Yeshiva, and then he lives 22 years away from his father, now he's back in Eretz Yisrael, he had so much sorrow. So Yehuda, at this point, Yaakov is an old man, is going down to clear a place for father, to instruct him where he should settle. However, then Rashi says, Lefana, before Yaakov will get there, Kodem Sheyagia Lasham. So before Yaakov arrives, he wants to make sure that it is set up. You don't wait till the guest comes to start making the bed, hopefully, and set up their room. You clear the place before they come. Medrash Agada Lehoros Lefanav, but the Midrashic interpretation of Lehorot Lefanav, and I'm not really translating on purpose because it means to instruct or to settle before him, but like we already said, Lehoros is the Shoresh of instruction or Torah, says Rashi, Litakein Lo Beit Talmud. This is the words of Rashi, to prepare or to establish for him a house of Torah learning. Shamisham teitzei hora'ah. From there, Torah shall go forth. So why did Yaakov send Yehuda before him? Yehuda was Malchus. Yehuda was the leader. Yehuda was the one who proved himself. Unlike Reuven, who was weak and unable to live up to the job of the Bechorah, Reuven was unable. Even in last week's parsha, Reuven says about taking Binyamin, if I don't bring Binyamin back to you, could kill my two sons. And Rashi says, Yaakov says, you're a fool. If Binyamin is lost and Shimon is lost and Yosef is lost, it's going to help me to take your two sons? I will never agree to such a plan. Reuven is a fascinating biblical personality who was the Bechor, but he really lost the rights to the Bechor and that he was too weak to bring his potential to fruition, accept responsibility, and get the job done. Yehuda, on the other hand, demonstrates great capacity as leadership. When it comes to Yosef, when it comes to Tamar and his ability to be Moda al Ha'emes, when it comes to saving Binyamin in the beginning of this week's parasha, Yehuda proves that he is a very strong character, and therefore he gets Malchus, and therefore Yaakov appoints him to get the job done. He knows if there's one of my children who will be successful in setting up the Beit Talmud, the house of yeshiva study, it will be Yehuda, as Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef lahoros lefanav haderach geshona. So I went to the Medrash, so I'm quoting from Medrash Bereishis Rabba. I went to the Medrash. Rashi, the beauty of Rashi, the godless and the brilliance of Rashi, is that he takes a teaching from Chazal. Rashi's very brief comments on the Torah. You can't learn Torah without Rashi. Very brief comments, but he's really bringing you a very short synopsis from a much larger teaching of Chazal. And sometimes it's helpful to go back to see what the original teaching was of Chazal. So Rashi is quoting Medrash Bereishis Rabba 95:3. Here we go. Davar achar ve'es Yehuda shalach lefanav. This is the pasuk that we're talking about. He's saying Yehuda before him lehorot lefanav or lehoros lefanav. So like Rashi says, to set up a Beit Talmud. So what do you learn from there? That you can't survive in Golos without Torah. You could survive without a pizza shop, even though we might not think so. And you could survive without sushi, even though it's dubious. And you could survive without beautiful catering halls and fancy clothing. You need the basics. But what's the first thing that Yaakov said there must be before I get there? A base Talmud. That's the first thing you look for in a new community. Not a new supermarket and not how, if it's a fancy community and not a fancy community, the first thing you look for is this a place of Torah? I'm a Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma. I'm taking a break from the Medrash for a minute. Pam achas ha'yisi mehalech b'derech u'paga bi'adam echad, says Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, avos perek vav mishnah tes. One time I was walking on the way and a man met me. And I saw him, shalom, and he says to me, shalom aleichem, Rabbi. V'achzarti lo shalom. And I gave him I'm going to make a joke. Maybe it was a New Year exchange. That's a total bad joke. It wasn't. It was two Jews. So Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma and this other guy, and they meet on the way. So he says, shalom aleichem. So he says, aleichem shalom. So he says, Rabbi me'eza malkom ata. Rabbi, where are you from? Amarti lo mimakom Torah. Rabbi me'eza malkom ata. I don't have a sitter on me, so I can't look it up. It's after Mincha and Shabbos. Rabbi me'eza malkom ata. So he said, mimakom shel sofrim v'talmidei chachamim. I'm from a place of sofrim, scribes, and talmidei chachamim. So the man says, Rabbi, ritzorcha shetadur imanu b'mekomenu? How about you come move to our place? I will give you Aleph, Alafim, Din, Rezav, Avanim, Tovos, Umargolios. I will give you thousands of gold and silver and pearls and gems. I'll pay you royally to come live here. And what did Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma say? Im ato nosin li kol kesef, v'zahav, v'avanim tovos, umargolios, sheba'olam. If you give me all the money in the world, eini dar ela, I will not live in a place ela, Bimkom Torah. The only place I will live is in a place of Torah. V'as Yehuda shalach lefanav al Yosef lehoras lefanav haderach. Rabbi Chanina berei de Rabbi Acha v'Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina, the son of Rabbi Acha, and Rabbi Chanina offer two different interpretations. So again, we're Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, as I already told you. One says lahatkin lo beit dira. What's a beit dira? What's a dira? An apartment. One says, he said Yosef to set up an apartment for him. So the footnote here says, I'm using Arskoa Medrash Bereishis Rabbah. So the footnote says, Yaakov say Yehuda to prepare a dwelling in Goshen. Interestingly, why did he want to make sure? Because it says, V'as Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef laharos lefanav aderach and Geshona. And they come to Goshen. Why Dafka does he need a Beit Dira b'Goshen? The Pasuk says, it's not just that he's saying Yehuda to establish a laharos lefanav, a Beit Dira, an apartment. Apartment in Goshen, which is the region where the Jews would live, but specifically it's tied to, he wants to make sure Goshen is set up. Why? So the footnote says, quoting the Eitz Yosef, Yaakov said Yehuda to prepare a dwelling in Goshen because he suspected Yosef would house him in the royal palace temporarily with Paro's ministers, and Yaakov would be honored in the royal court. Therefore, Yaakov said Yehuda to Yosef to prepare specifically a dwelling in Goshen, in the Jewish neighborhood. Immediately upon his arrival, he had no desire for such honor. He did not want to be honored in such a way and get any sort of royalty or accolades, and they don't want to lay out the red carpet, and therefore, even though everybody went up to meet him, but he doesn't want to dwell with prominence in the Egyptian capital epicenter. He wants to dwell in the Jewish neighborhood. I don't need so much attention from myself. Rav Aaron Leib Steinman, Zecher Tzadav Kodesh of Rachu, second year today was just Erev Chanukah, Chof Dalid Kislev, he ran from honor, and he was once in America. It says in the biography, he was once in America, and when he came back, he said, the upstairs neighbor said to him, we were in 5 Chazon Ish in the summer, the apartment building, the 4-floor building where Rav Steinman Zatzal lived with his Rabbitzin Tamar. We went to see Rabbitzin Yisraelson, who was his upstairs neighbor. Rabbitzin Yisraelson is a daughter of Rav Elyashuv and a sister to Rabbitzin Batsheva Kanievsky Allah Hashem, a granddaughter to Rav Aryeh Levin. So your mom is sitting with Godless, and on our way out, there was the door plaque, Steinman. They lived in this little, simple, no elevator apartment building in the middle of Bnei Brak. So Rav Steinman once came back, so his upstairs or downstairs neighbor said, how was your trip to America? So he says, they tried to feed me chazer in America. So the neighbor was astonished because he knew that nobody tried to feed Rav Aaron Leib Steinman chazer pig in America. So he says, who tried to feed the Rav chazer? He said, they tried to honor me. Everywhere I went, they tried to honor me. I'm working so hard to make sure my Yetzer Hara does not ingest the chazir. So you really see this basis here that Yaakov Avinu wanted a Beit Dira, but specifically where? It's not just Stam, he wanted an apartment. It's related to the fact that the apartment should be in Goshen. I want to live in a quiet, humble, in Bnei Brak, on five chazon ish, a little apartment where nobody has to know that here comes the Gadol Hadar. I don't want the prominence and the honor. Don't lay out the red carpet for me. So that's one interpretation. Lahatkin lo beidira. Second interpretation. V'chad amar lahaskin lo beis va'ad. To set up a study hall. Sheyehe mo rebo divrei Torah. This is the lashon of the Medrash that Rashi is quoting in brief. So Rashi's almost like, please God, forgive me, cliff notes. Okay? Chalida v'chas. Rashi's brilliance is in taking a long Medrash and giving you the message in a very brief way. So otherwise, you might not be, if I had to every week learn every pasuk with Unkos and Rashi, but instead of reading the Rashi, read every source that Rashi quoted. So the chances of me getting through the Parsha weekly are probably, me, my personal life, slim to none. To look up every Gemara and every Medrash that Rashi quotes, it's not going to happen. So Rashi makes Torah accessible for all of us. Mamish, brilliant. But the lashon of the actual Medrash, the first Beit Dira we already spoke about, he was fleeing from honor. I want in a regular apartment. I want to be anonymous like everybody else. I don't need to be in the house of the ministers. I don't need prominence. Don't feed me any chazir. One says, lahatkin lo beit va'ad, a study hall, sheyehe more bo divrei Torah, where he would more hora'ah leharot lefanav, where he would teach divrei Torah, v'sheyu hashvatim lomdim bo. At this point, Knesset Yisrael, they didn't need two venues to house the Siyum HaShas because there weren't so many people. There was all of 70 people coming down to Egypt here, right? So the women were the homemakers, I'm not making a joke, and the men are the ones who are going to learn. So how many people do you need to house? So you need, if you've ever seen a picture of the Volozhin Yeshiva, what it looked like in Europe, it wasn't like, Yeshivas Chachlein Lublin, my grandfather, Allah Vashem, learned there. But they had small yeshivas, the Shiva in Radin. It was small buildings. How many people were coming to learn? Sheyehei morabo divrei Torah. What was the purpose? I cannot. He's going into Golos. What looks like a triumphant reunion between Yaakov and Yosef is really the beginning of a very bitter shibud. Vayakam el chadash asher lo yada es Yosef. Vayomer al amav hava nischak malo. What looks like a wonderful, amazing reunion is actually the beginning of one of the most painful times in our history. It is the first national Golos. But what do you need before anything in Golos? With what can you survive? You can survive without a lot of things. You cannot survive without Torah learning. So Yaakov wants a yeshiva where he's going to every day sit and teach Torah, and the shvatim are going to come and learn there. That's what he wants for. Yaakov wished to ensure Eishar HaNechalamim, quoting from the Art Scroll footnotes, Yaakov wished to ensure he should not lose a moment of Torah study. What is the ikar in our lives? The primary thing that we toil for, and what is the tafel in our lives? What is secondary in our lives? Is Torah secondary and everything else we're busy for primary? So, you know, after I do, obviously not us, we are here, Baruch Hashem Minashir, which means that everyone here makes time to go learn Torah, but some people say, first I have to go to the gym, and then I have to go to the grocery, and then I have to go for the manicure, and then I have a work appointment, and then I have to prepare supper, and then we all have to do those things, maybe not the manicure, but everybody has to do all of those things, and they should be done. But do we make any, now obviously we here do make time for Torah, but the question is, do we make time for Torah? Yaakov Avinu wants to ensure that the first thing that is in Goshen, that is in Golos, that is in Egypt, is a Beit Talmud. The horos to teach. Yaakov wished to teach Torah, a study hall, so that he could be studied immediately upon his arrival. Continues the Medrash. Teidalacha shehu kein, you should know that this is true. Lahoros lefanav gishona. Kevan shahalach lo Yosef me'etzlo. Haya yodeh be'eza perek peshmenu. Very famous. Yaakov, Yosef, sends up wagons to his father, to bring his father down. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with this Medrash. I'm about to quote it for you inside. When Yosef sends for Yaakov, his father, who he has not seen for 22 years, he sends wagons to bring father down. How did you transport? You didn't send a car and a train and an Uber, and I'm going to arrange an Uber for you, just wait outside. You didn't send that. He sent a wagon. But the wagons have a deeper allusion. What was Yosef sending a message to father? Who remembers? Yeah? What was the last thing they learned when they were together? The parasha of Egla Rufa, if a dead person, if a corpse is found between two cities, Sefer Devarim, if a corpse is found between two cities, and you don't know how did this happen to this person, who is this person, they measure the distance to the closest cities found between two towns. Okay, now, when we say cities, in the time of Tanakh and in the time of Chazal, it's not like what you imagine today, the size of New York and the size of Manhattan. So they send the elders from the closer town, have to come, and they have to say, Yadenu lo shafchas hadam hazeh, we did not spill this blood. Why do you think they spilled this blood? How did this corpse get here? Why are you responsible? They weren't malava him, they didn't accompany him, they didn't give him food, you know. I just told my husband, the other day, I said, I think we need to stop talking about the security situation in front of the kids. I said, I'm practically getting afraid to leave the house. I think we need to stop, even though I don't have babies in my house, and not that we hide things from them, but it's a very frightening time. Fine. We sit down at the supper table yesterday. It happened to be everybody. We're all ages in my house. More often than not everyone is around with our schedules at the same time. All Baruch Hashem, the whole family is around the table. And one of the eighth graders says, you know, Rabbi was talking to us today about Jews in New York under attack. And I'm thinking, didn't I just say to my husband yesterday, we need to stop talking about this. It's because I don't want them. My son says this morning, I had very bad dreams last night. I'm not going to say what they were, he says. So he says, my Rabbi was telling us that New York, the Jews are under attack. And we cannot walk. The Rabbi was telling the boys that we can't walk alone anymore. The rabbi told them he carries a pocket knife now in his pocket. He showed it to the boys. We live in a different time. Egla Arufa, why were the people responsible? Why were they responsible? Because, well, there goes my idea of not talking to the kids about the matzav. Not overly harping on the security situation. No one has their head in the sand. You would have to practically be blind and deaf. I don't mean to insult anyone. My son is deaf. I have a hearing loss. I'm not insulting anybody. You have to be practically blind and totally deaf to not know what's going on today. Hashem Yishmer Aleinu. But by Egla Arufa, the elders of the closest city are responsible because there was a Jew here who left your town. Someone didn't accompany him. Melava esa orech, somebody that can now provide him with food and accompaniment, a protection, and therefore, in a sense, you are responsible. So it's not such a joke. We should not leave a person alone. In fact, the Das Akeni Mibali Tosfos teaches on Vayivater Yaakov Levado, Vayavek Ish Imo at Alos HaShachar, when a man wrestled with Yaakov on the river Yabok. Until the morning sun rose, the Das Kingdom says, you know why Yaakov the Jew was attacked? Vayivater Yaakov Levado. This is what happened when you allow your Jewish brethren to be alone. It's a Musar Haskel for all of us. The reality is we should not let a Jew be alone. So they come and they say, we're not responsible, and they break the neck of the calf. Egla Arufa. Orif is the back of the neck. Egal, the calf, they break the back of the neck. That was the last thing Yaakov and Yosef were learning together. In sending wagons, what's the word for wagon? Agalos, or agalot, same root word, ayin, gimel, lamed. Yosef was hinting to father that he did not forget the last piece of Torah that they learned. So, continues the Medrash, teida l'chasha hukein, you should know it's true. The first thing Yaakov wants in Galos is a yeshiva. Kevan shahalach lo Yosef me'etzlo. When Yosef left him, in other words, when Yosef was 17 and he was thrown into a pit, Haya Yodea Be'eza Perk Perish Menu. Yaakov always remembered the last piece of Torah that he and Yosef learned. Shahaya Mishana Oso. What were they learning at the time? We already said, Egla Arufa, we explained it. Kev and Shabo Acha Yosef Etzlo. When the brothers come back up to Yaakov in this week's parasha and they say, listen, we have some news. Amrulo, Od Yosef Chai. He can't believe it. Vayafag libo, kiloha aminam. He has a temporary misa. His heart literally overturns. His heart stops for a moment. He can't believe that my son Joseph is still alive. Vayafag libo. Oh, the magician says his heart stopped for a moment. Niskar be'eza perak perashemenu. He remembered the last thing I was learning with Yosef was the topic of Egla Arufa, Amar Belibo, and he said in his heart, Yodea Ani, I know Shebeperek Egla Arufa, Perish Menu Yosef. I know that at the time that Yosef was taken from me, we were learning the topic of Egla Arufa. Amar Lahem, he said to the sons, Im Atem Yodim Be'eza Perek Perish Menu Anima Aminachem. He said, I don't believe that Yosef is alive. The only way I will believe that Yosef is alive, if you tell me through Yosef, what chapter I was learning with Yosef. Yosef was his chavrusa, so to speak, his Talmud Mufak. He taught Yosef everything that he knew. The Rav used to be, Rav Salvechik, studied in his youth. He grew up in Kaslavish, a town on the White-Russian border, and he went to Chabad Cheder. And he says he's been indebted to his malamid his whole life because his malamid taught him about passion for Judaism, even though he says he didn't teach him so much Torah. So one time the Rav's mother tested the Rav as a child, and she realized the boy doesn't know anything. So I don't know what nothing means compared to today, but she took him to his grandfather, Rav Chaim Brisker, bless you. And she said to Rav Chaim Brisker, Zatzal, give him a faher. And Rav Chaim Brisker gave the boy a faher, who was all of 8 years old. And he said to his son, Rav Moshe, the boy's not learning anything. Take him out of the cheder. And you're his Rabbi Mufak. And the Rav would spend hours every day. First in the morning, he had to prepare shir that he learned with his father. And then in the afternoon, he learned with his father. This was the template Yaakov taught Yosef. So Yosef was 17. So the last thing they learned was the topic of Egla Rufa. And Yaakov says, I don't believe that. My son is alive, says Tmedrash. The only way I will believe you is if you prove to me, Yosef must have told you what we were learning. Af Yosef haya yodei be'ezer perek pershumenu. Yosef also remembered. He never forgot the last far Torah he learned from his father. Ma asa Yosef. What did Yosef do? Nasan lahem agalos. Yosef gave the brothers wagons. Not stum wagons. What was it an indication of? Egla Arufa, Father, I remember the last of our Torah you taught me, Shenemar, Vayitan them Yosef Agalos, and Yosef gave them wagons, Lilam Decha. Shabakal Malcolm, I'm still a Magistratius Rabbi, Lilam Decha, Shakal Malcolm Shahaya Yaakov Yosef, to teach you that everywhere that Yaakov sat, Haya Osek Batorah. Anu Ratzim, Vehem Ratzim. Anu Mashkimim, Vehem Mashkim. Anu Ratzim Liyoshve Beis Medrash, Vehem Ratzim Liyoshve Karanos. We run and they run. This will be said today at the Hadron. They wake up early and we wake up early. Anu Amelim Vehem Amelim. We sweat by our brow and they sweat by our brow. We run and wake up early and sweat by our brow to sit in the Beis Medrash, Kihem Chayenu Va'orach Yameinu. And they wake up early and they sweat by their brow to sit on the street corner. Well, Yosef Koronos, I'm not like being derogatory. Well, I'm Decha, Shabakal Malcolm Shaya Yaakov Yosef, to teach you that every place that Yaakov sat, Haya Osek B'Torah. Wherever Yaakov sat, he was dwelling in Torah. Kishem Shahayu Avosav, just as his forefather. And the Medrash even says a question that some of us have had, I'm sure, and that some of us hear. V'ad achshav lo nitna Torah, even though some people say, how could the Avos have learned Torah if the Torah wasn't given, even though the Torah was not given? And nevertheless, it says about Avram, v'yishmor mishmarti, Avram learned Torah, Yitzchak learned Torah, and Yaakov learned Torah. But ad kidei kach, that he, wherever he was, he sat and he dwelled in Torah, that when he sent Yosef off, they were learning Torah. And when he was reunited, what was the proof that Yosef was alive? Not a distinguishing birthmark, but a distinguishing Dvar Torah. I remember what we were learning. If he remembers what he was learning, and that's the secret password. You could tell me Torah abracadabra, then I know that my son is alive. The insight on the bottom of article footnote in the Medrash Rabba quotes the Shla, the Shnei Luchos Habris. So the Shla derives a general principle from here. No matter what endeavor a person embarks upon, his first thought should be the sacred aspect of the endeavor. No matter what endeavor you embark upon, the first thought, says the Shla, should be the sacred aspect of that endeavor. For example, you know, someone came and he asked Rav Palm Zatzal. He was a dentist. It's brought down in the Rav Palm art school biography. So he was a dentist. So he asked Rav Palm, what should his machshava be? He's a dentist. He makes parnasa. So Rav Palm says, first you should have in mind you're doing the mitzvah of helping people. You should have in mind you're fulfilling a mitzvah with your avodah. Secondary is, you're also making parnasa. Not, ikar, I'm making parnasa. Tafel is, brought down in the Rav Palm biography, tafel is, I'm helping people. First, you're doing a chesed. You're doing a mitzvah. Secondary is, you are helping the person, helping yourself make parnasa. For example, if one merits to build a house, He should design first a room in the house that will be designated for Torah study, prayer, meditation, a meeting place for Torah scholars. It's brought down there Rabbitson Batsheva Kanievsky, Alal Shem biography. The one time her and Rav Chaim went to see a grandchild who had gotten married recently, and they had a silver curio. So Rav Chaim looked and he says, when are you getting rid of the shmatas? When are you getting rid of the shmatas and putting up your Sifrei Torah? Only then should he turn his attention to the mundane details of his home. However, now we can understand Beit Dira. If you remember, the first interpretation of the Medrash was that Yaakov sent Yosef Lahoros Lefanav. And the first interpretation of the Medrash was not Beit Talmud, but Beit Dira, an apartment. But we already explained it's because he didn't want prominence, he didn't want the gaiva of kavod. But now another interpretation. Does it really mean he wanted a residence? What does that mean? Divrei Yitzchak suggests the residence is intended to mean, I said the sentence badly, I'm sorry. Divrei Yitzchak suggests that the term residence, Beit Dira, intended by the Medrash's first opinion, also involves sacred considerations. How so? He set him to set up an apartment. When it comes to Goshen, he'll have somewhere to live. How is that sacred? Yaakov had no interest in housing his children in palaces or mansions. And he did not want his family to settle in Egyptian cities, exposed to the dangers of assimilation. He wanted to settle in their own neighborhoods, with modest homes where they would be raised in a Jewish environment. That is the way, a second way to understand Beit Dira, specifically in Goshen. First way, he was fleeing from prominence and kavod and honor. Like Rav Steinman said, I'm trying not to ingest any chazir. Second interpretation is he understood that when we are in Galus, we are subject to the whim of the Umas Olam, and that the dangers of assimilation are very real. It is a real and present danger. Therefore, he was saying, my primary, my ikar, heim ratzim v'anu ratzim, heim amelim v'anu amelim, heim mashkimim v'anu mashkimim. My primary thought is that we need to establish around the yeshiva a Jewish neighborhood. And I think that's one way to take both of these interpretations of Lahoros Lefanav and put them together. You build a base yeshiva, you build a base Talmud. Around that, you build the base dira. The base, the bias, the base medrash, the lashon of the medrash is base vad shehei morabo divrei Torah v'shiyu ashvatim lomdimbo. So these two interpretations are not contradictory. They actually complement each other. He sent his son Yehuda, Malchus, the one who could get things done, to set up a Beit Talmud, says Rashi. Around the Beit Talmud, you build your Beit Dira. And that's something we have to ask ourselves. What are our homes built around? What are our lives built around? What is the ikur for which we are amel, for which we sweat by the sweat of our brow? And what is the tofel? This was the residence Yaakov had in mind. This was his vision for his sojourn in Egypt. The only way to survive the galus is by ensuring that your Beit Dira is built around your Beit Talmud. This mission was so important and so vital that he entrusted it with Yehuda, the proven leader of the family. So this is a beautiful way for us to understand the rush in this week's parsha. The only way we can survive in galus. Sometimes people think, unfortunately, if we're more like them, they'll like us more. It's exact opposite. If we're more like them, they'll like us more. Unfortunately, nothing could be farther from the truth. I may have said this here before, but it's something that is on my mind very much, especially when we see the goings on today with our enemies. There's only two times in the Torah, two words in the Torah, two instances in the Torah that have this root word. If you heard this already, it's worth it to review. Pei, Resh, Chaf. Shoresh. Pei, Resh, Chaf. Parach. The first time is by Shibud Mitzrayim, which begins in this week's Parsha. The Shibud usually begins when they welcome us with open arms. It's a pattern. So they worked us, a call of Odasam Asher Abdu Bahem Befarach. They worked us with back-breaking labor. The other time this root word is used is what? Beautiful. Sefer Shmos by the Parochas. Okay, when we come to the end of Shmos, we read the parashos that deal with the Binyan HaMishkan. The Parochas was the partition that separated in the Mishkan between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You had a beautiful woven partition, curtain, that separated between the Holy and the Holy of Holies. Now, you should know from learning together already, I focus very much on Shorashim in learning and both in teaching. And Lashon HaKodesh, nothing is an accident. So if these two words, Avodas Perach and Parochas, have the same root, something that we talk about a lot together, that means that there's a connection, even though on the surface they seem to have nothing to do with each other. One is back-breaking or hard labor inflicted by the Egyptians upon the Israelite slaves, and the other is the partition that was woven, that Bezalel, the master craftsman, oversaw the weaving of the partition between the Holy and the Holy of Holies. So Rav Shamsher Fal Hirsch, and learning Rav Hirsch has really forced me, or taught me, I should say, to focus on Shorashim in my learning. Rav Shamsher Fal Hirsch, who died in 1880, has an unbelievable pshat. And he says, if we don't put up a partition between ourselves and the Umos HaOlam, they will do it for us through back-breaking labor, Rachmana Litzlan. It's not me saying this, it's Rav Hirsch, and he died in 1880 in Germany. If we don't, you could all go look up. If we don't put up, it's commentary on Shmos on these words, if we don't put up the partition, the parochas, we don't distinguish between ourselves and the Umos HaOlam, then they, unfortunately, will put up the parochas for us through Avodas Parach. And the only way we can survive in Galus is not thinking that we could be like them. It doesn't ever work. Woe unto he who thinks that that is a measure for success. You know, I started reading this book, Operation Exodus. I think I'm not finishing it. It's terrible. I know that everyone hates the Jews. It begins in the Holocaust, and some of it is so graphic and explicit. Operation Exodus, Gordon Thomas, the author of Gideon Spies. It's not a bad book. It's a very important and good book, but it's just a very difficult book. For example, there's a story, the boy who... It begins with different stories from the beginnings of the Holocaust because a number of these people ended up on the Exodus, on the ship. So we know that they turned the Nebuch, it's not the right word, Rachman al-Litzlan, may the Almighty help us. So many Jews were turned away from so many shores. For example, one Maisa in the book, he followed different people and their experiences. The boy was the gatekeeper at Auschwitz. He opened and closed the Arbet Machfrei, he opened and closed the gates. He also delivered notes between the camp commandant and different divisions in the camp. So after I read this, I said, I think I'm not reading this book anymore. So one day he had to deliver a message to the head of the crematoria that Mr. So-and-so should be executed. One of the Sonder commanders who worked in the crematoria should be executed. Why? Word got back to the camp commandant that this man had cremated his wife and three children. His job was to cremate the bodies. And one day, the body of his wife and three children came out of the gas chambers, and he had to cremate them. He put them into the ovens. So the camp commandant was nervous that this Jew might go mad, and it would disturb his daily walks through Auschwitz-Birkenau. So because his walks might be disturbed by the Jew who had lost his mind, that day he commanded that he should be executed. So I'm not sure if I'm going to finish the book. It's very painful. I'm not living with my head in the sand, but with so much to choose from, I don't know if right now, anyway. But this page made such an impression on me, and I found it very powerful, because sometimes, unfortunately, we think that we don't need Beit Dira built around Beit Talmud. It's better not to live in Goshen. I mean this metaphorically. It's better to try and blend in, to mesh in, to look like them, talk like them, walk like them. Then, that looks up to us. If we, Rachmana Litzlan, assimilation today in America is rampant. And where's anti-Semitism going? Up. It's an inverse relationship. Or actually, maybe it's a not inverse relationship. The more assimilation rises, the more anti-Semitism. It doesn't work. The more we try and acclimate, the more they hate us. when we forget that as Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef lahoros lefanav, and based on the Medrash and many commentaries, we have explained in depth what lahoros lefanav means. Without knowing that Torah is our ikkar, heim amelim va'anu amelim, heim ratzim va'anu ratzim. Do we live for vacations? Is that why we live? They're very nice. If you have the time and you can afford it, so enjoy it. But do we act appropriately on our vacations? Do we act like Jews? You know, of Aaron Lichtenstein in his Sefer, by his light, beautiful, beautiful Sefer. He was a Korah Shashiva with Rav Amital, Yeshiva Har Tzion, a son-in-law of Rav Soloveitchik. So Rav Amital has a very powerful piece on Glatt Kosher Judaism. Glatt Kosher Judaism, he says, everything they have, we need to have. They have this, so we pack, got kosher packaging. We package it so that it's kosher, but it's not necessarily Jewish. They have vacations, he says, we have vacations. And this is what would be considered a modern Orthodox Rosh Hashiva. Not from the Haredi camp, but everything is packaged in glatt kosher packaging, but not necessarily is it appropriate. We have to remember that the only way that we can survive Galus, the only way, is Hadron, that we will return to you. Today they're going to be saying, we'll return to you, Talmud Bavli. And it's so inspiring. It's not only the Gedolei Hadar who are being Messiah Maim. There are many lay people, regular, working Balabatim, who are holding up the world with Torah. And it's such a Yom Tov for all of Knesset Yisrael. If we do not appreciate that the Beit Dira must be built around the Beit Talmud, that the first thing Yaakov said, I don't know where I'm going to go on vacation when I get to Egypt, and I don't know where I'm going to eat out when I get to Egypt, and I don't know which caterer I'm going to use to cater my party that's going to be over the top like nobody ever saw, and the competition and the invitations are fancier than the other person's invitations. We should enjoy life. Hashem put us here to enjoy good things. But you have to know what's ikker in your life, and you have to know what's tafel in your life. What comes first and what comes second. And when I read this page, it made a very big impression on me. Jacob Cronenberg had followed his daily routine, leaving home in a suburb of Nuremberg and traveling to the city center. He worked as a clerk in an accounting firm. He was in his late 30s, and Jacob had been married for 6 years. His wife, Christabel, was unable to bear children. They adopted the son of Christabel's cousin when the cousin died. The boy's name was Freddie. He was a chubby, cheerful child. The Cronenbergs were not religious, and Jacob liked to appear no different from his German neighbors. He sent them Christmas cards. He displayed a Yuletide tree in his living room. He took the family to the city's traditional market to buy gifts for Freddie to mark the birth of Christ. Hebrew was hardly spoken at home, except when cousins came visiting from the country. Though his parents were Hungarian Jews, Jacob believed he had become completely absorbed into the German way of life. Even to the point where he wondered, should he leave his Jewish employer and seek work with one of the city's Catholic firms? Christabel urged him to stay where he was, reminding him his salary was good. Work in those days was hard to find. All Jacob had to do was continue to take care, to say or do nothing, which would include him in the diatribes against the Jews. Hitler continued to deliver over the wireless and in party newspapers. So if you just exclude yourself from those Jews who Hitler is targeting, you'll be okay. As the tram came closer to the city center, he's on his way to work one day, Jacob noticed there were stormtroopers everywhere. He does not consider himself Jewish. He is totally assimilated. He buys a Christmas tree and Christmas presents. Jacob noticed there were stormtroopers everywhere. Some were posting slogans calling for a boycott of Jewish businesses. For the first time, he felt uneasy. He folded his newspaper, he placed it in his briefcase. He covered the skullcap, which his employer insisted he should wear at work. Walking towards his office, Jacob saw several in the Jewish quarter had their windows smashed, contents from the stores thrown into the streets. Jacob's unease grew. Waiting outside the doorway of the building where he worked were several stormtroopers holding clubs. One beckoned Jacob to come forward. Another moved to block his retreat from behind. A third grabbed his briefcase and tossed the contents onto the cobblestone. The skull cap was held up for everyone to see. A blow from the club smashed Jacob's teeth. He collapsed to the ground, only to be hauled to his feet. A trooper produced a knife and cut away the pants that he was wearing and pulled off his undergarments. to paint his genitals with dye. He was circumcised. Finally, a placard was attached around his neck announcing, "I am a dirty Jew." And the only thing I could think of when I read this is Rav Shamshon Fal Hirsch on Avodas Perach and Paroches. The Torah is so profound. It is so prophetic. If we think that throwing off Torah, that we can make time for everything else and not make time for a shir, that we shouldn't live in Goshen, but we should act like them, look like them, be like them, will save us. It is the exact opposite. The only way we can survive, Yaakov Avinu teaches us, the first thing he needed in Egypt was the city of, if we're forced to be in Galus, then we have to know how to survive. And the only way to survive is building our Beit Dira around our Beit Talmud. Interestingly, there is a Medrash, as quoted by Rav Salvechik. I tried to look it up, but the source that is brought down, I've quoted Rav Salvechik from all over, I'm quoting from many different sfarim today, but this, if you're leaving, please make sure to sign in before you go. I don't know where the sign-in sheet is, but some people came late. It's here. Who needs a sign-in sheet, please? There are people who need it, please. Okay. So Rav Salvechik tells over, very interesting, that there is a Medrash. So in the Sefer, where this is brought down, Chumash Masoros HaRabba Reishis, the Medrash is quoted, but I cannot find that Medrash. I'm not sure if it's a misprint. The Medrash tells us that many Jews in Egypt had scrolls, probably, says the Rav, consisting of Sefer Bereishis, and every Shabbos they would read these scrolls. The Rav quotes this in two different places, as far as I know. The redemption did not start with Moshe. The Jewish belief in the promise of redemption was nurtured by the reading of these scrolls. So what did the Jews in Egypt do? Despite the backbreaking labor, every Shabbos they sat down and they read something from Bereishis. Unbelievable. These scrolls help maintain their unique identity. The scrolls of Torah help us maintain our unique identity. And if we try and get rid of our unique identity, the Umas Olam come and they quickly remind us we are not like them. Heim amelim va'anu amelim. Heim ratzim va'anu ratzim. Heim yoshvim va'anu yoshvim. Anu lebei Talmud and them to the Yoshve Koranos. That peace was so astonishing. Here is a Jew who thought, as long as I don't associate with those Jews, I will be saved. The Beit Dira has to be built around the Beit Talmud. V'as Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef laharos lefanav Geshona. Dafka in Goshen. We have our own neighborhoods, our own priorities, our own way of life. It's the only way we could survive. The Medrash says that the Jews from Shabbos in Egypt, in the week they were in the fields with backbreaking labor. And on Shabbos they were in their homes around their tables reading from the scrolls of Bereishis. There's a beautiful Medrash. Medrash Vayikra Rabba 9:3. That first came to my attention in a shir by Rav Hanan Adler, Shavuos 2016. The first Shavuos that we spent four Shavuos ago. What's the plural of Shavuos? Shavuot? So were you with me 2016? No. Okay. So if you've never been, it's really something to treat yourself to. It's quite an inspiring, unbelievable Yom Tov experience. So Rav Hanan Adler Shlita, one of the YU Rosh Yeshivas, gave a shir, and he quoted this medrash. And it was such a moving medrash. I remember I still have his handout. I went to look it up when I was preparing for this shir. And it's unbelievable. There's a medrash, Vayikra Rabbah 9:3. Right? And the medrash says, some of it's Aramaic, and some of it's Aramaic. So I'm going to read it in English because we're running out of time. I don't have time for the Aramaic and the English. Okay, but you could all look it up. Medrash Vayikra Rabbah 9:3. Here we go. Rabbi Yanai said, okay. Rabbi Yanai was once walking along the road. He saw a man who was extremely well-dressed. Rabbi Yanai said to him, "Would you like to come to my house?" The man said, "Yes." Okay, so here I have the Lashon of the Medrash. Not making any of this up. Here's the Lashon of the Medrash. Due to time constraints, I'm reading the English. "Would you like to come to my house?" The man said, "Yes." Rabbi Yanai came to his house and he gave him food and drink. Okay. I'd like to quote some of it. "Hichnisu leveso ha'achilu v'hishkahu." He brought him into his house. He met a man who's very well dressed. Looks like a prominent individual. He brings him to his house. He gives him food and drink. "Badko b'mikra v'lo matzo." He tests him. "Do you know any Torah?" The man doesn't have any Torah. "Torah shebichtav." B'mishnah, v'lo matzah. He tests him on Mishnah, doesn't know anything. Ba'agada, lo matzah. B'talmud, v'lo matzah. The guy seems to be a total ignoramus. Amarle, sav berich. He says to him, you are a boor. You are an ignoramus. So Rabbi Yana, oh no, I'm sorry, I translated it wrong. Please forgive me. He tests him. That's why it would be better for Michal to stick with the English when I'm running out of time. So he says to him, sav berich, wash your hands and bench. Amarle, the man says, yivarech Yanai bevesa. You know, Yanai should bench. You're the host. I don't want you. Can you honor us, lead us with the benching? And the guy says, we're in Yanai's house. Yanai varech. Amarle, isbach. Amar ma da'ana. Amarlach. Okay, I'm going to go to the English. Let Yanai recite grace. Seeing he could not recite a blessing. So he doesn't know Mikra. He doesn't know Mishnah. He doesn't know Agada. He doesn't know Talmud. So he says, bench. So he says, Yanai should bench. So Yanai says, can you repeat what I say? He said, yes. Said Rabbi Yanai, repeat the following. A dog has eaten Yanai's bread. Amar achal kalba pistitia de Yanai. Kalba kalev from pas. A dog has eaten from Yanai's bread. The man got up and he grabbed Rabbi Yanai by the coat. And he said to him, my inheritance is with you. You aren't holding my inheritance from me. Said Rabbi Yanai, what legacy of yours is with me? The man became angry. The man does not know Mishnah, Mikra, Agada, Talmud, and he can't lead Birkas Hamazon. So Rabbi Yanai said, you're a dog. So the man got up and he grabbed Rabbi Yanai and he said, you have my inheritance. Rabbi Yanai said, what inheritance of yours do I have? So the man said, Chadzman, what does that mean? One time. Havena avar kame base sifra. One time I walked by a base sefer. Ushamis kilohon dimineya kaya. I heard the voices of the children saying, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morasha kihilas Yaakov. One time I walked by a base Talmud, I walked by a base Sefer, I walked by a base Medrash, and I heard children studying, and they were studying Torah tziva lanu Moshe, the Torah that Moshe commanded us. Morasha kihilas Yaakov is an inheritance for kihilas Yaakov. Morasha kihilas Yaakov. No, Morasha Kilas Yanai ain't Kasiv Khan, said the man to Yanai. Ella Kihilas Yaakov. The man rebuked him. The man said, don't judge me. You have my inheritance. What's your inheritance? One time I passed by a base sefer. I read you the Lashon of the Medrash. And I heard the children saying that the Torah that Moshe commanded us is the inheritance for who? All of Kal Yisrael. Not only, it didn't say Morasha Kilas Yanai, said Morasha Kihilas Yaakov. Rabbi Yanai said, so how are you worthy to eat at my table? The guest replied, never have I heard an evil word spoken against me and returned to argue with the person who spoke it. Never have I seen two people arguing without making peace between them. Said Rabbi Yanai, you have so much Derech Eretz, and I called you a dog. Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Every person on their own level has some of us excel in Chesed, some of us excel in Derech Eretz. Some of us it's easier to say Happy New Year to the Umos Olam than for others. Some of us excel in Torah. Some of us are on a high level shir and some of us are on a low level shir. Some of us got a shir and we don't necessarily understand everything that was said, but we have to ask ourselves, what is our primary and what is our secondary? What do we live for? Yaakov Avinu in this week's parsha teaches us that the only way to survive Galus, the only way, is to ensure that the Beit Talmud is the epicenter. And around that, every Beit Dirah should be built. Who does Torah belong to? Every single Jew on their own level. Whether they are being Messiah Mshas this morning, or they are being Messiah something smaller, or it is a child in yeshiva who is learning today one pasuk with one Rashi. It does not say, Morasha Kihilas Yanai. You don't have a monopoly because you are a brilliant Talmud Chacham. It says, Morasha Kihilas Yaakov. I'm going to end with a story that is very apropos. It is from a book called Stories That Light Up Your Heart by Rabbi Pruzansky. In the early 1950s, life in Eretz Yisrael was difficult for nearly everyone. Food was scarce, money was scarcer, and for the Holocaust survivors, life was even more difficult. They were rebuilding from nothing. There was little or no luxury in most people's lives. My mother told me, my four grandparents were Holocaust survivors, Aleha Masham. My mother told me many a time, you didn't have guests. You didn't buy food to invite other people, not because they were mean, she said they worked so hard. You didn't use your money to invite people to your home on Shabbos. There was no culture of Shabbos, just because people simply did not have. You couldn't take the little bit of money that you made. My grandfather was a welder. Your father was a roofer. You couldn't take the money that you slaved away for in a country of foreign that you got to by chance. My grandfather writes at the end of his memoirs, even in Canada, we found plenty of anti-Semites, and you invited people you didn't have to pay for other people. So this one Holocaust survivor, Moshe Schreiber, his generous invitation to the entire shul to come partake of a siyum in his home was a surprise. He was making a siyum gemara, and he promised food and drink. And if you read anything about the founding of the state, the people were literally, in before the state, starving. People had nothing. The night of the siyum, the Schreiber home was filled to overflowing. The table was laden with tempting food. There was such a feast. They couldn't imagine why there was such a feast and was such extravagance. So Moshe said a guest, "What masechta did you finish to merit such a siyum? Did you perhaps finish Shas?" "I have finished Maseches Moed Katan," said Moshe. The curious guests were astonished. They were quiet. "Well, Yachlu Achav La'anos also. Moed Katan was one of the shortest masechtos in Talmud. For this, you went all out." "It's time for me to speak," said Moshe. "Let me share with you what Maseches Moed Katan means to me. Like many of you here, I am a survivor of Auschwitz. So much happened I would like to forget, but one thing I hope never to forget. There was a man who slept on the bunk, on the board, on top of me. He was called Yosef HaTzadik. In such a place where you had to struggle to stay human, he was a holy Jew. His lips moved all day, davening and reciting Tehillim. He held on to Hashem at every moment. At night, while I tried to fall asleep, I heard him mumbling in bed. I couldn't tell what he was saying. I assumed it was some kind of tefillah. Sometimes it lulled me to sleep. One night, Yosef whispered to me, 'Moshe, listen, I need you to do something for me. My time is coming to an end. There's something I want you to finish.' 'Don't talk like that,' I said. 'You know, the war is coming to an end. The Germans are giving up. Hold on, Yosef. We're going to get out of here.' 'I don't have the strength,' said Yosef. 'Just listen. Every night I learn Gemara by heart. When I was a boy, I memorized a few Masechtos. I am constantly reviewing them. This is what has kept me going, but I'm not going to be, I can't do it anymore. I have just started Moed Katan, but I'm going to die before I finish it. Promise me, Moshe, if you get out of here, you're going to finish Moed Katan for me.' By now," says Moshe, "the tears were streaming down my face. I was awed by the holiness of the man. We were in Auschwitz. He was dying. Anu amelim v'heim amelim. Anu ratzim v'heim ratzim. Anu mashkimim v'heim mashkimim." He was dying. And what bothered him? He might not finish Maseches Moed Katan. "Of course, I agreed to his request. Thank you, Moshe. Now I can die in peace." A few days later, he died. And I found out that he passed away. And I davened to Hashem, "If you help me survive, I will fulfill my promise. I vow that if I had the privilege to finish Moed Katan, I will make a grand siyum to celebrate. Not just the completion of the Masechta, but the significant spirit of the Jewish people who cling to the Ribono Shel Olam no matter what. Tonight is our victory," said Moshe Schreiber, "because the Nazis are gone and Torah lives. And this is a simcha for all of Klal Yisrael." Comments Rabbi Pruzansky, "Indeed, every time a boy goes off to yeshiva to learn Torah, every time a blah, one blah is learned, every time a siyum is made, it is a victory and a celebration for all of Knesset Yisrael. V'es Yehuda shalach lefanav el Yosef lehoros lefanav goshana." So a really heartzegah mazel tov to anyone who's making a siyum today. My husband's Amir Yomishir finished Maseches Kedushin this morning. Baruch Hashem, whether you made a small siyum or a grand siyum, it is a victory. Ki heim chayenu. Va'orach yameinu uvahem negam yomam v'laila.